Welcome to O2 Coaching's Empower Your Team podcast series with your host, Chloe Caron, founder and president of O2 Coaching. As an executive coach, author, businesswoman, thought leader, and speaker with more than 20 years of experience, Chloe's USC, her unique strategic contribution, is to create a new generation of inspiring and inspired leaders by positively impacting the lives of 1 million leaders through her webinars, conferences, books, and podcasts. In this podcast series, Chloe and her guests will take you on a journey, sharing their leadership stories, struggles, successes, and learnings. The conversations will highlight practical advice and insights for leaders. Be sure to share your thoughts on this podcast series on our LinkedIn or Facebook pages. Enjoy this podcast.
Hello, I'm Chloe Caron. Welcome to my podcast, Empower Your Team. If you've missed last week's podcast, please go and listen to it. We had Patricia Gauthier, Head Vaccines Business Unit at GSK Canada. She talked about her unique strategic contribution, but overall how to be in a very strategic mindset, especially in these days. She gave us a bit of information also on the vaccines that they are working on against COVID, obviously. Go ahead and listen to it. Amazing things to and great insights from Patricia. This week, again, an amazing encounter with Finn Doyle, Senior Vice President, Global Head Commercial and Regions at Biocon Biologics. I met Finn at Novartis. She was head of the oncology unit at Novartis Canada. She was so inspiring. And that's almost 6 years ago, before I launched my own business, O2 Coaching. And her and I connected in so many great ways. What I took away from her is actually our topic today is how can you bring your best self? And how can you, as a leader, show up as your best self? And I'm thinking about all that we're going through right now, how difficult it might be for you personally, how it could be difficult professionally. And one, remind ourselves that we're not alone in this. And two, how can we really leverage and tap into our best selves? The part of us that knows that we don't need to be perfect, the part of us who knows that together we have the answers, the part of us who knows that being authentic and real, and you can be whole at work and at home, you can be one person, that best self is actually who your people, whether they're colleagues or employees, are actually looking to see, to meet, and feel the humanity of us all. I think that's what we're looking for. So again, enjoy this podcast. I know, like me, you will take amazing notes. And as always, stay inspired and be inspired.
Congratulations, you've done so much, Chloe. It's really nice to be talking to you again. It's been too long, but we've been in touch and it's nice to be actually talking. And thank you for asking me. It's a real honor to be asked to participate.
Thank you for being here, because you and I met, as you were mentioning right before we started the recording, 5 years or even more ago. You were the GM of Novartis Oncology here in Canada. You are now the Senior Vice President, Global Head Commercial of Biocon Biologics. You're now in Asia.
That's right. I'm based here in Singapore.
And you've been all over the world. So you're originally from Ireland. You've been to Canada, the States, now in Asia. You've traveled the world. What did you do when you in all of this traveling?
Oh, well, it's been wonderful. We were actually in Poland before that. So I think it's been a wonderful experience. I had lived in a few places before I actually had kids even. I had traveled a lot and was always interested in doing so. And myself and Stephen, my husband, always said, look, if we got an opportunity through one of our work to travel, what a wonderful chance that would be for our family. So it's been a real adventure. We've kept our house in Ireland and we go back so that we keep the kids grounded in who they are. But it's been an incredible growing experience, not without its bumps, because every time you go to a new country, you have to start again. So there's the side of us loves the adventure and the unknown and the exploring. And then there's the other side of you that comes out every so often. Are we ever going to learn? You know, we keep moving house. We keep starting all over again. But that's part of the adventure. And I think it's been really good for us as a family, because I think it does pull you closer together and give you very unique experiences that are special to you as a family.
And you talk about your family, and I think this is a big component of who you are, because you have four kids with Steve. I mean, that's in itself is a big accomplishment. And you have an amazing career. So I'm thinking people that are listening are saying, how does she do it? Like, how do you have four kids and have this amazing career?
So actually, I have six kids. But I have an amazing husband. And you know what? It's kind of funny, because I always say to people, look, the best training I ever got actually was my kids. You know, I didn't wake up one day with six kids, but we got there one at a time. And we learned so much from them. The first thing I learned from them was humility and to be grateful. The second thing I learned is that everything can't be perfect all the time. And you just sometimes have to just go with it as it is. Or, you know, the saying, good is good enough. I never understood that before I had kids. And I think you do have to be appreciative and grateful and go with the flow. So for me, the big thing was you can't plan everything to perfection. It doesn't exist. So you aim for excellence. You aim for your best, both at home and in work. You do your best. And hopefully it works out. And when it doesn't, you dust yourself down and you get on with it.
How pertinent, because our topic today is bringing your best self as a leader. And when I... This is one of the topics of my book. And when I was thinking about who to invite for this topic, your name, your face, your leadership, your words, because I saw you in action, came to mind. It was so obvious to me that you were the person for this topic. For what you've said in terms of not looking to be perfect and really bringing who you are. And also because you're such a leader that... is in touch with the human being on her team. And I really wanted to hear that. So how do you bring your best self, and how do you bring the best in others?
So thank you for your comments. I really appreciate it. I think part of growing up as a person and as a human being is learning to become more self-aware about yourself. But also part of growing up is learning to the importance of being yourself. Because actually being your best self is being your authentic self. And once you realize that, it's just such a wonderful moment, because you realize, actually, I am who I am, and that's who I bring to work. And so you are yourself at home and you are yourself in work. So to me, bringing my best self is about being my authentic self. And it was a learning, because at the beginning of my career, I was always trying to be the executive. Now I'm me doing the very best I can in a job I love. And that's a much nicer place to be. But the other thing I'd say about your best self and a learning that I've had over the years, there's two things. One is, despite everything, I've learned that I do need a bit of pause in my life. So I'm very high energy and I can go 20 hours a day, no problem. And I used to always think, hey, this is great. I can go 20 hours a day, 4 hours will do me fine. But the problem is, you're not at your best. So one of the things I realized only 3 years ago, so you can call me a slow learner, but we're always learning. But it was an aha for me, and I'd love to share it. I was sitting in a meeting, and it was called the Corporate Athlete. In Novartis, I was a vice president, and they brought a group of us on this Corporate Athlete. And it was to teach us about how to look after all of yourself. You know, if you're an athlete, you really take care of everything, your nutrition, your hydration, your rest, your exercise. And they showed us pictures of the brains of people who were, for example, dehydrated. And the brain of a person who was dehydrated really started to look like a leaf that was beginning to dry. But then they showed the brain of somebody who had not got enough sleep. And it was horribly shrunken and shriveled. And in that moment, I had an aha. And they then played a video of a guy who was very senior in IBM at the time, and he had been working on his nutrition, on his exercise, even on his hydration. And while he was being interviewed, he said, you know, the one thing I haven't mastered yet is sleep. And actually, not long after that interview, the guy unfortunately passed away of a sudden random heart attack. So it was an aha on two levels. One was, you can't keep going without sleep. But the other is that you're never your best self if you haven't enough sleep. And as I looked back on my career, the moments where I was at my best were when I'd had some pause, when I had enough sleep. And that's where I was able to do more for others, be more helpful for my family, be more supportive to my husband, be better in my work. And so it was one of those moments where I thought, you know, when I want to be my best self, I just have to get sleep. And I had spent until 3 years ago, even in Canada, all that time, if I needed to run, sleep was sacrificed. If I needed to work on something, sleep was sacrificed. And honestly, since then, I have completely changed my approach. And actually, ironically, I gained a little weight after because I said sleep is the most important thing. But over time, then you balance that out. But I really have really become committed to that. And it just makes all the difference.
And what's your ritual to really get those hours of sleep if you've gone from 4, 6, whatever hours of sleep now to whatever you need? How do you make that shift? What do you do to sleep better?
So when I was in my last role, I was very established at the time. So it wasn't too big a challenge. So I was able to say to myself, okay, you cut out that run at 6 in the morning and sleep until 7, go to bed an hour or two earlier. So that piece was doable. Moving into this job, moving to Asia in a job that's really busy, I'm learning all the time. It's wonderful, but it's also a global role. So that actually took a lot of discipline. And I had moments where there was bumps. It wasn't always possible. But what I said to myself is, look, over a week, in those first weeks, over a week, make sure you get enough sleep. If there's one night where you can't do it, that's okay. Don't panic. But it's about creating and making it a priority. So over in Singapore, for example, we tend to start a few hours ahead of other parts of the world. So I use that time to actually take an extra hour's sleep. And just get up feeling more rested. And it's so worth it. And I hold on to that hour. So even if a colleague here locally says, hey, can we meet at 7:30 or 8? And I'll always say, no, I can't. And that's it. Because I think you have to prioritize, you know, what's going to make you be your best self. But also, this is your health you're talking about. And there's a lot of people depending on them.
And we do it for our cars. We bring in our cars, you know. I mean, we put the best oil in our car and we do it for our cars. So why wouldn't we do it for ourselves? And I love the maturity with which you speak about that. And you're really not a slow learner, because I think your message will resonate with a lot of people that are go, go, go. And although COVID, I think, I'm curious to hear you on that, has brought a lot of realness to who we are as leaders. We're more authentic, I think. It brought a lot of work to our homes. And so being able to say no or put limits is a bit harder.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I went through that as well. You know, I was moving from the US after Canada, I was in the US. So I was moving from the US to Singapore. And then we stopped in Ireland for what we thought was a couple of days, and we ended up doing lockdown there. So I was working in different time zones with the family. And had to carve out a routine where I, you know, one of the things I've always feel is very important, both with work and at home, is to try to manage expectations. So in a week where I have a lot coming, I'm not going to pretend everything is going to be great. So I will say to my husband and the kids, say, look, this week's going to be really busy. But I promise you this, after 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. during the week, I'm yours. And then at the weekend, we have dinner together and we'll do things together. And it's funny, it just really helps if people know it. I think the toughest thing, and I learned along the way, is that when you don't do that, then people are constantly disappointed or constantly stressed. But when you manage that, whether it's a move or during a week, and you say to people, here's how it's going to look like, I think that really helps. And, you know, I want to come back on something you asked me earlier, because it's back to people and the people around me. So my motto, I don't think it's a surprise for you, has always been, people first, always. And in fact, Chloe, one of my favorite quotes, which I just heard recently and I've stolen unashamedly, it's from Richard Branson. And he says, I care deeply about my customers. And you know, Chloe, I care deeply about our patients and customers. But he says, I obsess about my people. Mm-hmm. So I do. I want to, I try and live that every day. And I do believe that as leaders, people see what you do, not what you say you're going to do. So when you say you're going to do something, you have to live that. You have to be it and walk it. So for me, you know, you said earlier, what about helping people to be their best selves? I think one of them is, you know, people thrive when they're growing, when they have a sense of purpose, when they feel empowered, but also trusted. And for me, the best ways to support the people around me is to empower them and to trust them. And I will often say to my team, look, I trust you. Because I think even saying the words is very important. It's validating you to say, you know, I trust you. Because I think that people who are trusted and empowered and believed in do amazing things. It's not that they can do, they actually do amazing things. And then we have to appreciate. So for me, what I try and do is, on the one hand, have their back. On the other hand, empower them and see then where they need me to step in. You know, so if there's a time, I mean, I had one person on my team in Poland, for example, who was a super, super talent, wonderful human being, but she was a perfectionist. And I remember, you know, we having several conversations with her saying, you know, you're never going to get there. And explained to her how I too had been a perfectionist and had to have children in my case helped me. But I think with people, it's really important that they know you have their back. And you have to remove fear from the room. And so people feel, okay, I'm believed in, I'm empowered, I can do it. So, you know, and I think as teams, individuals, that's important. And as teams, you know, I was reflecting on this. I think as teams, the same is true. But you have to set everybody on the same page. And so I think people also like to be growing and stretched. So it's good to have a stretch goal. It's good to be believed in and empowered. But then with that comes the responsibility and accountability. So I think people who have that blend but know that they're trusted and believed in will hopefully be their best selves at work.
So in what you're saying, what really resonates with me is the fact that people love to be seen and heard. And I've seen you do this amazingly. Be genuinely curious about the other person and listening to that other person with openness of what is possible. And I think that's one of your mantra, to look at what's possible, to always think about what is possible. How do you do that when you're busy, you're running? I mean, like, how are we able to listen with that openness?
It's interesting because I think it's experience too, isn't it? You know, in the end, I've read some really great articles and I'd strongly recommend them recently on generous leadership and what generous leaders do. And I try to aspire to be like that. And I wouldn't dare to say I'm fully there yet, but we're all a work in progress. And I try to be like that. But I do believe, I think it's my worldview. I believe that always thinking about what's possible. Because if you think of what's possible instead of why you can't do something, you're always looking at the solution and you can almost work back from the future to where you are now. And that somehow makes it compelling, but it removes some of the barriers that if instead of standing now and thinking, how am I going to get there, stand looking at what's possible. And then you think, okay, now let's work back. What do we need to get there? And when you see that starting to actually then happen, or you see it happen for others, that then creates a kind of a positive momentum. And, you know, a book that really triggered me on that was Tribal Leadership. I don't know, have you ever heard of the book called Tribal Leadership?
No, I thought you were going to talk about Ben Zander, The Art of Possibility. So what's the tribe?
Yeah, and then I'd be asking you about that. The Art of I really believe in the what's possible, and it makes life exciting if we think, wow, what is possible? There's so much possible out there. Yeah, but I'll tell you, Tribal Leadership is a fantastic book because it kind of puts language around the what we do and the how we do it. So I'm about to murder it in terms of trying to do a summary, but I'll do it briefly. So it's a book that really talks about levels of culture. Mm-hmm. And the mindset at each level that's required. And it basically talks about five levels of culture. What I love about it is, A, it's an easy read, so that works for me. And B, it provides common language, which then in a team you can use. So the five stages of leadership are, stage one is everything sucks and the world sucks. That's not really a great place to be in. We don't really want too many people like that in our teams. But if there are people like that, we want to help them. but they're not the people we need in our teams. Stage two is my life sucks. And that's not a whole lot better. They're really the kind of the passive aggressive water cooler complainer type conversations and mindsets. The third one is I'm great. And it's all about, I am really great. I can do things. I can beat you. I can win. I can do great things. And we often see this, actually, it's interesting. We see this in salespeople, of course. We often see it in physicians too, or any very competitive fields where people are very busy showing how capable they are. And that is a good way to achieve goals. But what inspires me more is when you get to level 4 and 5. Level 4 is we are great. So when we come together, we are really great and we can do some amazing things. And level 5 is what I would always try to get to with the team. And you can't actually be there all the time, but you can be aiming for it and have moments of it, which leads to amazing things. Level 5 is we can change the world. So you're not looking at your competition. You're not looking at each other. You're actually focusing on what can we do? How can we make the sum of our parts greater than we are? And I think any one of us loves to feel that we're part of something bigger, loves to feel that we're serving some purpose that has meaning. And I think if we can do that within our teams, create that sense of purpose, create that sense of meaning, articulate it clearly, then people who have that sense of we can change the world can do amazing things. So that's tribal leadership.
I love it. I love it so much because we're focused on the impact that we're having. And as you know, as I'm coaching, I find that the shift between being an expert and becoming a leader, for me, that represents what you just described, is it's no longer about me achieving whatever it is that we need to achieve, but it's about us having the impact that we are looking to have. And that's, to your point, really meaningful, because you're right. People wake up, even though they might not know how every morning, but they wake up every morning wanting to make a difference.
Yeah. And feeling like they can. And, you know, something I think this has become increasingly important to me over the years is the I in we. And what do I mean about that? You know, it's very easy to say we need to do this and we need to do that. But often if we're in a group and we're saying we, a lot of us think that's someone else, right? The step before that is I. So one of the things I really try to think about and try to get my team to think about is, what's the I in this? What am I going to do to make a difference? Because when I'm doing that, and if all of us are thinking, what am I going to do? Things will really move forward.
It's the accountability you were talking about. As you trust to your team, you also empower them to be accountable, is what I'm hearing.
Exactly. Exactly.
You love to be in gray zones. I mean, you don't expect things to be white and black and white, I don't think.
No, that bores me.
Because you can't. Everything is gray, I'm assuming. So how do you navigate that? What's kind of your... Obviously, your mindset is focused on the end result, on what we are aiming to achieve together. But how do you navigate the gray?
It's a great question. I think it's just who I am. It kind of excites me. And I think sometimes when it's particularly ambiguous or gray, I think it's really important then, more than ever, is to pause and be comfortable and to chunk it down. So I'll often chunk something down. Say, look, what are the bite sizes? What are the things that we actually need to do in bite sizes? Because you have to bring everyone with you. So just because I'm comfortable with gray or ambiguity doesn't mean everyone is. So I think it's really important, I think, if you are leading a team or as a leader, to be able to articulate things in such a way that on the one hand, it's okay for gray. In fact, it's not only okay, it's actually quite exciting. But here's some of the things we can do. What do you guys think? So again, bring them into the conversation, give everyone skin in the game and start to move forward. And I think it's really important that your team see, again, people see what you do, not what you say you're going to do. So they have to see that you're comfortable with that. So I navigate it in a way, Chloe, because I love it. I've always been drawn towards jobs. I mean, you know, I've done this Strengths Finder, and what comes out number one all the time is futuristic. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite quotes, which will give you no surprise, is the best way to predict the future is to create it. And that's an Abe Lincoln quote. But I love it. How exciting is that? And it's true. You can wait for the future to come along, or you can actually pull it forward. And as leaders, we have to shape the context around it. Otherwise, we're victims around us, I should say. Otherwise, we're victims of it.
And that creates a lot of energy in your team, from what I've seen. And so how do you consolidate that one team mindset? You've already mentioned, you know, we've got a big purpose. We're heading in the future, but on a regular basis, you know, when everybody is the head of their divisions, they need to push their agenda. They need to move forward. How do you make sure that everybody works from that one team mindset?
I think that's the other piece of it. You know, when you say people first, always, it has to mean that. So in the one-to-one sessions, and one thing I always, I'll come back to the one-to-one sessions, with every team I've had, we have a weekly team check-in. So we have a, you know, an operational meeting, but before that, it's just a team check-in, where if anyone has anything on their mind, it surfaces, and we sit together. And we used to say we'll stand together. We're not very good at doing that, you know, the healthy way, but now it's virtually, right? But it's really good just to have that touch base, starting with how was your weekend? And not everyone wants to discuss their weekend. So let the people who want to discuss their weekend discuss it. Then look at who's been quiet, ask them a question that you feel they'll be comfortable with to bring them forward into the conversation. And then when people are comfortable, say, look, guys, anything on your mind? Anything anyone can help you here with? And it's not just me. You know, the one thing I think is really important is to say, look, I don't have all the answers. I wish I did, but I think we, between us, you know, 1 + 1 can be 11 if it's the right two people together or more. So if we together, we will figure out the answer to be in this group, or between us, we'll know who to reach out to. So I think it's really important to keep that human touch and then to have frequent one-to-one meetings with each of your team. And then in our more formal operational meetings, you know, that comes, that's where the accountability piece comes out. No, and that's on me too, right? I can't ask other people to be accountable if I'm not. Which means respecting other people's time, which means being on time, which for me is a constant struggle, because I that's not who I am. But it's something that when I'm working with a team, I really work hard to make sure I'm on time within plus or minus a minute, because I have to respect all of their time. And that's, you know, you have to walk the talk. And personally, that's my struggle because I'm not naturally on time.
Well, you're involved in so many things and you've got, you know, six kids. You're used to living in, I'm assuming, in the chaos, and you work well in that environment. You thrive in that environment. So it's also probably a big strength of yours. So I wouldn't demand too much on me if I were you there.
Yeah, I think it even energizes me. I think sometimes that actually energizes me. So not being late. I mean the chaos and the buzz. You know, I go home from work some days and I see the family and it energizes me. I go into work, I face something very compelling or exciting. It energizes me.
So it's sad to say, but I think we're towards the end of our time together. I would love to continue this. Perhaps maybe we'll do a sequel if you're okay with that. But I'm curious to hear you on what I call my 1 minute questions. A couple of seconds to answer those, just quick questions. What's your USC, your unique strategic contribution? I think we kind of heard it, but if you had to put it in a sentence, what would you say is your unique strategic contribution?
I'm future-based. And so for me, it's always about mapping out the future and creating a vision and then lining up the organization and trying to bring the organization with me to get there. So I'm future-based. But I would say behind that, and first and foremost, actually is people and trust. Because I think as a leader, if you trust your people and if you build trust, all the other stuff happens. But I think my USP is really... really looking at the future and bringing my people with me.
What's your one tip to empowering your team?
Just do it. You know, you could talk about it forever. If you really believe that you've got great talent around you, you know, you bring them in, just do it, empower them. Some people will fall, you help them. Failing, I heard a little four-year-old say, I thought it was brilliant. Failing is, she said, I learned in school that failing is first attempt in learning, F-A-I-L. I think it's brilliant. When babies are learning to walk, they fall over all the time. So failing is fantastic. It's how you learn. So just do it.
First attempt in failing. Is that what it is? Failing?
First attempt in learning. F-A-I-L. First attempt in learning.
Learning. Love it. What is your one piece of advice to a leader who would want to raise their bar?
Ask them. I would ask them, and I would listen, why do you want to? What do you want to raise? Because most people know the answer themselves. And then as a general observation, I'd be there for them based on that answer. As a general observation, I think many leaders underestimate the importance of the culture that they build around them. I think culture is what we swim in. So you can focus so much on delivery, but I think it's the one thing that if we pause, we have to ask ourselves, am I creating the kind of culture where my people can unleash their individual and collective genius? Am I doing that? Am I removing fear from the room? Am I role modeling authenticity, integrity? Am I role modeling it's okay to criticize me?
This is the premise of my book, because every time I work with a leader, I find that they underestimate the impact that they have on their team, on the culture, on the organization, because we just grow into roles and we forget that the more we grow, the bigger the impact. And I think we just underestimate the impact that we have. But once we realize, to your point, how big an impact we can have on the culture, how exciting this is. And I'm really hearing this in what you're saying, that we can really shape the culture of our organization, how big it is, you know, whatever big it is.
We have to. And I think some leaders, and we've all done it at times, let ourselves off the hook. Mm-hmm. Say, oh, well, everybody has to do that. Actually, the leader does set the tone. Mm-hmm. And then, yes, everybody does need to do it. We all have. And this is back to the I and we. We all have to do it. We all have to be accountable. But if the leader isn't doing it, you have dissonance in the organization and you're not going to have it. So that's back to, as a leader, you have to remember you're being watched. You're being observed. And people are looking to you. Mm-hmm. And you need to take that responsibility very seriously. As well as, of course, you have to have fun.
And this is fun. I mean, how lucky are you to do what you do?
I know. I have to say, I've loved every single job. And that is an amazing feeling. I couldn't do it if I didn't. But I feel I've been very blessed.
And last question, if you had to summarize leadership in three words, what would those three words be?
Trust, integrity, and humility.
Fiona, it's been a real privilege to have you. I hope we can have this conversation or continue this conversation again very, very soon. What should I wish you for the last part of 2020?
What I would like to wish you, I hope you will wish me. I wish you every health and happiness, personal and professional success. But I think if we're personally happy and healthy, that's really the very best we can wish for.
Right back at you, Fiona. Right back at you. All the health and happiness.
Thank you so much. Take care. Thank you for asking me.
Thanks for listening to this Empower Your Team podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it and can take away powerful tools and ideas. For more free content, events, and development tools, visit our website at empoweryourteam.com or on our LinkedIn or Facebook pages. And be sure to sign up for our newsletter to continue receiving Empower Your Team content and insights.